You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello and welcome to Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd with me, Hannah Crosby. We're delighted to be recording our second series right here in our historic home in St. James's. Together, we'll be uncorking and discussing the wines our experts have pilled from their own collections, each from a wine region you may not have discovered, but undoubtedly deserves to be on your radar. For this week's episode, we sit down with our buyers, Max Lalondrau and Adam Bruntlett, to discuss a French wine region that's on the up, the Loire. The region is famous for its renditions of Cabernet Franc and Chenin Blanc, but increasingly, its terroir-focused single vineyard wines are becoming very important to wine lovers around the globe. Today, armed with a bottle of 2020 Sancerre from Claude Ruffaut, Adam and Max are here to make the case for Loire wine. Max, Adam, welcome back to Drinking Well, and thank you for sitting down with me to explore why wine from the Loire is becoming the new collectible French wine. Adam, listeners will remember you from our first series on our Burgundy episode, but you're here today because you hold a particular fondness for the wines of the Loire. Can you tell us a bit about the first time you visited?
The first trip I ever did, really in a serious buying sense, was to the Loire Valley. And we started off, actually, it was a lot of driving, drove all the way down, but we started off in Champagne, then went across to, or down a bit to Chablis, visited a couple of people there, then headed west to Puy, Sur Loire and Sancerre, which are only about an hour and a half drive from Chablis.
Really?
Yeah, the regions are very close to each other, both geographically and stylistically. I think they share quite a bit of soil type in common as well. And I often think Chablis and Sancerre have a lot more in common than maybe Chablis and the Côte d'Or. But yeah, we then spent a week all the way along the Loire, and it was great. You have so many different styles and great varieties. Mm. And I think the welcome from the people was great as well. Everywhere we went, people were sort of fighting over each other to be able to invite us to lunch or dinner. It's a really friendly attitude from the growers, and it's a very personal area that I really like and hold very dear. Before I started buying Burgundy, I definitely had more passion for the Loire initially, and it's something that I'm really excited that actually there is an increasing interest from serious wine collectors in the Loire now, so that I can really bring that passion a bit more to our customers.
100%. So Max, listeners will remember you from our first ever episode. Feels so long ago. We recorded a video call, but we're finally together in this beautiful location, St. James's. And for this episode, we're recording from a room called The Parlour. Could you tell us a little bit about it and the kind of things that we can see?
So The Parlour is an old wooden room, which is, you know, filled with history. And as you look on the wall, there's a lot of portraits and old bottles and which retrace the history of the building, but also the families across the centuries. And it's an amazing room. We have three or four of these rooms as you come through St. James's number 3, which we use to obviously for entertainment. So we have our customers coming through and we discuss their requirements. But actually, as I said, these are kind of a all-style surgery rooms, as you would have with your GP. You would just come in and then talk about your wine needs rather than any health issue that you may have. So we very much still use them as such, and we actually maintain them and rebuild them to make sure that customer come through, they get a feel of the business, the history, and then we can discuss with them their requirement for wine collecting.
Inviting them into the amazing wood paneled world of Berry Brothers and Rudd.
Exactly.
And so let's move on to the reason that we're here. Wines from the Loire. So Adam, you've said before that there are quite a few incorrect preconceptions people have about wines from the region, but talked about this real difference between old and new Loire wine. Can you explain what you mean by this?
Yeah, I think possibly because of the relative proximity of the Loire to Paris, a lot of wines that were produced there were destined for the Parisian market and essentially for bistros and brasseries. So These were wines that would have been shipped in barrel to the restaurant. They would have several barrels per year, and the wine would be served direct from the barrel. And often they were wines that were quite young, and the wines were made sort of for a very early drinking. I think there's a perception that, you know, a Chinon or a Sancerre or a Sauvignon Touraine or a Muscadet should be drunk very early and within a couple of years of bottling. But I do think there's been a real movement towards making wines that are a bit more serious, can we say that? But more structured and age-worthy, at the same time as there's been quite a strong movement towards more sustainable viticulture. It's really surprising because the Loire is probably one of the hardest regions to work organically without chemical assistance, because it's quite wet and cold, which means there's a lot of disease pressure. But there's actually a huge movement of organic winemakers there. So I think there's definitely been a concerted effort across the whole of the Loire, really, by younger people generally to move towards A, making wines organically, and B, making wines of a higher quality and a more structured style that's age-worthy. I mean, there have always been great wines that age really well in the Loire. I've had great wines from Demenuet and some, you know, really old Bonzo and Moulin Touché, Coteau de Léon wines in white. So Chenin can age very well. And then red, I've had some great old Bourgogne in the past and Chinon as well. So the aging potential is there, but the vast majority of the wines were made relatively in this younger drinking style.
Mm. Well, Adam, we tasked you with bringing along just one bottle from your own collection to help us understand this huge shift in winemaking in the Loire. What have you brought in for us?
So I've brought in a wine from a grower who I'm really excited about and have been for quite a few years in Sancerre. This is made by Stéphane Riffaut. The domain is Domaine Claude Riffaut, which is the name of his father. I chose, you know, this wine because I think it represents some of that shift from early drinking wines to making quite serious terroir focused and organically made wines. So Sancerre, I think, has a bit of the kind of brand recognition around Sancerre is a kind of double-edged sword, in that it makes the wines very easy to sell, but it also leads to quite a bit of complacency in winemaking. It's very easy to sell your wines. So in the past, there's been a really small number of growers who are making wines or using organic viticulture because it's too big of a risk to lose the crop, and it's much easier to just rely on chemicals. But it's slowly kind of changing, and there are more and more growers who are working to organic principles and making wines of a higher quality, reducing yields, picking by hand, making the wines in a more serious way using barrels or large concrete tanks rather than stainless steel.
And this has all come from the son's involvement in the winery now. What was it like before?
Before, the wines were sound, good examples of Sancerre, but generally the wines were blended together into sort of rough soil type selections. So they had a few different cuvées, but they weren't single vineyard wines. And Stéphane has taken a more Burgundian approach. The wines now are made in a much more parcel selection way, so looking at individual vineyards, and there's a lot more use of large oak barrels, foudres, which are sort of, they vary in size from what he's got, but anything from the equivalent of a few barrels to 10-20 barrels, and concrete tanks and concrete eggs, so just containers rather than stainless steel tanks as they had before, that these different types of fermentation and aging vessel give the wine a bit more character, more oxygenation during the winemaking process. And you tend to get a bit more texture, body, and more complexity in the wine, more lees contact during the process. So you get that extra density and weight. So this particular wine is called Monoparcelle 469, which is a rather mysterious name. The monoparcelle is a single parcel, a single block of vines. 469 is the number, the cadastral number, which Stéphane had shown me the map. It refers to this particular parcel, which is in a vineyard called Les Sentiers. It's a south-facing vineyard, quite steeply sloped. The vines here are 65 years old Massol selection Sauvignon Blanc. It's a relatively recent acquisition for him. He took it on from a retiring vigneron who'd been selling his grapes to the co-op. Converted to organic once he bought it, and then the first vintage I think we had of this was 2018. And yeah, this is made in a mixture of larger barrels and foudre, quite a long aging, because often with Sancerre, the kind of commercial style of Sancerre, the grapes are picked, then fermented, often using cultured yeasts, which are sort of selected yeasts from a lab rather than indigenous yeasts that are present in the cellar or in the wine, the vineyard. And then often using things like enzymes to get them through fermentation quickly, and bottled frequently in January or February without much aging or lees contact. And it produces a quite, in my opinion, a less interesting style of wine, with a lot of Sauvignon Blanc varietal character, pushing towards the New Zealand style quite frequently. There's been a lot of movement towards that to kind of jump on that trend as well. So this is kind of the opposite of that. This is a lot closer to the wines of François Cottard, maybe, who makes wines and in a very natural way, allowing them to ferment with the natural yeasts that are present, not using much sulfur during the winemaking process, and as I say, fermenting and aging in barrels, in this case, old barrels, so there's no like obvious oak influence, I don't think.
No.
Rather than using a temperature controlled stainless steel tank, which is, you know, as it sounds, quite a neutral and sterile container, this just allows more oxygen during the process to interact with the wine, which gives a bit more complexity and more of that lees contact. So made in a way that you'd expect in Burgundy or with white Bordeaux, for example, but probably a bit less oak. But I think it's an example of what can be achieved if you're really serious in the vineyards and the winery.
Perfect. And Max, what are your thoughts on this wine? How are you finding it?
I can see
your glasses actually. I know.
I'll give you a top up.
I'll be patiently listening to Adam, who's the expert in the business when it comes to the wine. I'm more of a tourist. And then so actually, as a matter of fact, I haven't tried this wine before. So it came. And my vision of Sancerre is probably, as Adam said, is more a quaffing style of wine made in high level of production, because the name itself sells the wine anywhere in the world. It's one of these branded region, which seems to work very well. So it takes a lot from a winemaker to actually pull back from the certainty of selling to local co-op all these fruits, and being paid, to be fair, a fairly high amount for making poor quality fruits, to actually pull back from that. And then what's in that glass, which is a kind of it's an intellectual wine in that it has persistence, it has a full body without being viscous, you know.
Yes.
But you can see there's a presence in the glass, there's a presence on the nose, and definitely in the mouth. It's almost tannic in a way. So you there's a bit of a grip when you drink the wine, which shows to me that, you know, there's a huge amount of work in the winemaking and in the vineyard to generate this kind of persistence in the glass. And it finishes, it's very elegant, it's very delicate. And the proof is in my glass, it just makes you want to go back to it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Pretty impressed.
We've poured you another glass now.
Yes. <so.
laughs> You've said that the key varieties that you champion, like Chenin Blanc and Cabernet Franc, you see them as a great next natural step for lovers of both Bordeaux and Burgundy. What do you mean?
I think obviously, you know, the Loire Valley, as Adam says, is a very, very long and large region, you know, different kind of landscape and different grape varietals. But I think it is very well known for Sauvignon Blanc, and if you ask the majority of consumers, they will know Sancerre to an extent, to a certain extent, they will know Vouvray, but Anjou from maybe some rosé or some kind of a cheaper end wines. But actually, what got me excited about the Loire Valley is the lesser talked about Chenin Blanc, which is obviously very crucial in Vouvray, but you don't know when you're buying a Vouvray that it is made of Chenin Blanc. And I think Chenin Blanc is incredible grape, and especially in the Loire Valley, and so is the Cabernet Franc. And I think the beauty with the Loire Valley is really sits very comfortably between the Burgundy and the Bordeaux regions, both physically but also in terms of the style. And that's what I think will lead them to become one of the fantastic high-end kind of a wine regions, because Cabernet Franc has the potential to be very delicate, but also it's age worthy, so it will probably age 20, 30 years without too much problem in the hands of the best makers. And Chenin as well has this incredible capacity to age, but also is the grape which is both delicate but more powerful, a bit more like a Chardonnay if you want. It has capacity if you want to make something quite big, and I think the combination of the two will provide an extremely good balance in, or middle ground, I would say, instead of balance between Bordeaux and Burgundy.
Mm. And Adam, you're such a huge advocate, you've already said, for the ageability of these wines. They have quite a stunning aging potential, and I believe you have quite a good story that involves a cave to back this up.
Yeah, so there's a domain that we work with called L'Ami de l'Île Boucard, who are based in Bourgogne, who make some really age-worthy wines. It's a combination of families, as you can probably tell from the three names in the title. But Philippe Boucard, who is the sort of patriarch to a certain extent, is a good character. And whenever I book visits there, I know that it has to be kind of the last one of the day, because it can go on in a very good way. The great thing about the area of around Tours is that often the cellars tend to be cut into the limestone, the tufo, and that's the case here. And you head down into the, sort of gently down a sloping ramp, but you kind of go down hairpins, so it gets deeper and deeper. Past piles and piles of bottles, their policy is just to make every vintage, put it in the cellar, and then when it's ready, they'll release it. So until quite recently, they were still selling the 1976 because it was such a tannic vintage that it needed so long before being released. But we managed to pick up a parcel of 2009 at the end of last year as well, which was great, and some magnums of 2005. Every time I go there, there's always a great tasting. And I remember one year, Philippe announced we would do all the nines. So we tasted 2009, 99, 89, 79, 69, 59, 49, I think all the way back to 1919, which was great. It's always good to kind of take a trip back in memory lane and try and figure out what was going on at the time of those wines being made. So it's great to drink history in that way, and in a really convivial setting with someone very jovial who just will talk about football and politics and everything. We just sort of sit there and put the world to rights. It's so dark, you've got no idea what time it is outside. It's just, you know, it's a great experience, and it does show the ageability of these wines as well.
Yeah, it's a complete testament to just how collectible they can be. And Max, you've said before that you're only at the start of your journey into discovering wines from the Loire, but are there any producers that you think people should be keeping their eye out for?
For the moment, it's the beginning of the story, I would say. The world is out there to discover the new wineries and the new generation who's basically claiming back all these vineyards which were basically sold to local co-op, and doing what we're showing today with the Sancerre, something a bit more special and for the longer term. So there are plenty of wines out there. Our job, Adam's job, mine to a certain extent, is to make sure we find those new wineries. And so we started this year by bringing, Adam already has quite a few properties we're looking after, but we're trying to look more and more into who we can bring in. And so we brought in a new winery called Arnaud Lambert, which has been recommended to me by some friends in France. And it's taken about 3 years to get them to even allow us to try their wine. So, and that wasn't to do with COVID. And both Adam and I were sitting in a tasting room and trying the wines about 2 or 3 months ago. And we were just amazed by the quality of the red wines, Cabernet Frambaise, and obviously their Chenin Blanc. And they probably had about 10, 12 different cuvées. And the majority of them were absolutely fantastic. A lot of work to do, but I think they've got a huge amount of potential. Mm. So it is our job today to go out and then find these new properties and build them and bring them up to the consumer's attention.
And Adam, how about you? What producers should we be on the lookout for?
We've got a nice little group of Sancerre growers. Riffo is one of them. But also Daniel Chotard. It's Simon Chotard who's taken over from his father and following a similar path to Stéphane Riffo in terms of organic viticulture, single vineyards, looking outside of tanks for making his wine, using foudres and things like that. Alban Roblin as well in Sancerre is the same, converting to organic and doing more work on single vineyard wines and higher quality wines. Outside of Sauvignon Blanc, I think there are some people we've been working with for a little while who are maybe not as well known to our customers as they should be. Vincent Carême in Vouvray, I think, is really good. He's somebody who is really well respected in the local area. He teaches a lot of young winemakers, the Lycée Viticole in Amboise, and he has a huge following. He's doing a lot to help local growers in the area to move away from selling their grapes to the co-op and to set themselves up. But his wines just get better and better as well. If you want Chenin Blanc, then he's a good person to look at.
I've spoken to both of you about how the rise of Loire wines can kind of be pinned to like the effects that global warming is having on the region. Max, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I think this is exactly right in that sadly, the Loire Valley is one of the few winners in the kind of a global warming battle. They used to produce wines where good or great vintages used to come once or twice every decades, and now we are at the stage where the regularity in producing great vintages is almost, you know, 8 out of 10.
Really?
And that in itself has given the opportunity for growers to sell their wines for a bit more money, to find a new public, and also to then being able to reinvest into the vineyard. And as I was alluding earlier, when it's easy for them to sell to the local co-op and be effectively as, you know, crop growers.
Yeah.
But investing into pulling back from that and investing into the winery takes a huge amount of risk. And the global warming and obviously the fact that they can grow grapes more easily has helped them to produce better wines and get more money for it and reinvest. And then it's kind of a cycle. And that's why we as a business really believe in the Loire Valley has been the next big thing over the next, you know, 10, 20 years, because the investments, the new generation and the global warming will obviously contribute to get more serious wines onto the table.
With this in mind, Adam, is vintage variation something that we should be paying attention to just as much as, say, Burgundy?
Oh, definitely. I mean, possibly more so because it's a more marginal climate than Burgundy, even being a bit further to the north and being more influenced by proximity to the Atlantic. Yeah, I think it's interesting what Max was saying as well about the price of wines. And I think it's important that growers are able to sell their wines for a good price. And I think that's part of our job as well, to encourage them to be bold and be aspirational in terms of their winemaking. And
it's still very much in its infancy as a region.
Yeah, and I think everyone I meet in the Loire they're all very humble and very, very human and modest. And I think there's a lot of sort of established prices for a Chenin or a Bourgogne or whatever. And I think there has to be a realization that if you're making a really high quality product, there's a price that comes with it. And I think these wines are still incredibly good value, even so.
And for wines for drinking now, Max, you've kind of alluded to how well they pair with food. What kind of things should we be pairing it with?
Hopefully the ones we are selecting and the future of the Loire Valley means that the wines will be able to age a lot more. So at the end of the day, they will be very Burgundian in style. All Cabernet can actually take that, what we call Pinot. So they turn into kind of Pinot Noir note after 15, 20 years. And same with the Chenin Blancs and the Sancerre. I think they will be, you know, fresh but serious white wine. So you would associate these with the same pairing that you would do for any of the Burgundy wines, and especially, you know, light food, fish food, but kind of creamy fish rather than just off the grill. And, you know, some light duck for the reds, for example. So there's plenty of light dishes that you would probably associate with the wines, rather than, you know, a big steak that you would need to, grilled steak that you would need to put next to a fairly young Bordeaux, for example. So delicate wine, delicate food is really the way I would go for it.
So just to round things up, Max, as someone who's only just started embarking on his own Loire wine journey, could you give our listeners just one reason why they should take the first step on theirs?
You know, when I looked at Burgundy, you know, 20, 30 years ago, people were trying to convince me that was the place to buy wine from. And bearing in mind, I come from a Bordeaux background. I did struggle at the beginning because you needed to understand the people, the wine, the grapes. But obviously, as it is proven today, Burgundy is an extremely successful region and actually quite an expensive region to collect. And I think in the Loire Valley, we are very much where we were 25 years ago with Burgundy. We are right at the beginning of the story. But I think all the elements, all the ingredients are there to make it a very successful story. And I think from the consumer's perspective, if you start to fill up your cellars with incredible Loire wines, You'll be there to enjoy them and be quite schmerk about it in about 20, 30 years' time, where you'd just be thinking, you know what, only pay £12.50 for that.
Yeah.
And that's very exciting. And I think the quality of the wine is stupendous. And then, you know, Adam was talking about Bourgogne and Chinon. For me, Bourgogne and Chinon really resonated with bistro wines 20 years ago. But at the moment, you know, from the wines that I'm starting to collect from these regions, I have discovered wines that have ageability potential, which is incredible. And I think, yeah, I think it's definitely a region to watch.
Mm. And finally, Adam, if I had to press you for the biggest misconception people have about Loire wine, what would that be?
I think it's probably that that people think that they're made for relatively early drinking. As Max mentioned earlier on, the Loire is often associated with Sauvignon Blanc and Sancerre or Touraine Sauvignon. And I think the vast majority of what people see on the shelves is it's drunk within the first year or two of it being bottled. I think what I would say is probably that you need to look outside of that, look for high quality people, because even high quality people are pretty cheap relative to other fine wine regions. Look at Chenin Blanc and Cabernet Franc and serious Sauvignon, and put it in your cellar for a bit, give it a few years and see how it evolves. The ability for Chenin and Cabernet Franc to age is very surprising, and I've tasted some of the best wines I've ever had have been made from those two great varieties and have been seriously old, 1945s, 1911, things like that, and they were fresh as a daisy. So go for it.
Brilliant. Well said. Well, all that remains for me to say is, Max, Adam, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with me and your stories today in these wonderful surroundings. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd. If you'd like to browse the producers mentioned in today's podcast and see what wines we have available, visit bbr.com/podcast. Or if you're interested in starting your fine wine collection with Berry Brothers and Rudd, all the information you need can be found on bbr.com/collecting. Now, if you've enjoyed this episode or you've been enjoying the podcast in general, do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. We hope to welcome you back soon, but until then, thank you again for listening to this episode of Drinking Well.